Right, so let me start. Morning. So yesterday we started studying the dynamics of RW spacetime. And so we basically postulated based on the symmetries which we observe of our universe, we postulated this kind of metric. And then to specify the dynamics of the scale factor A, then we actually need to specify what the matter is. What is the source of this metric? And the physical source is that of the perfect fluid, which is the most general team you knew, which is consistent with homogeneity and isotropy on the three space. Okay, so then, of course, we want to use the Einstein equations to find how the scale factor behaves. And if you plug it into the GR machinery, you get two Einstein equations, which are independent, and they can be combined and they can be shuffled a little bit, so that you get these two Friedmann equations, which are first order equations for rho and for A. However, these are not the only unknowns. We also have an unknown, which is the pressure in our equations. And so we need to complete the system of equations. And so we need to provide the equation of state, how rho depends on p. And if we do that, then we have three equations for three unknowns, and we can solve the system. So by the way, this nicely captures all this, the first days of general relativity, that people are studying extremely simple things like Schwarzschild solution or FRW spacetime. So in Schwarzschild solution, basically the only non-trivial coordinate is r. Right, so your Einstein equations sort of reduce to ordinary differential equation in R coordinate. So similarly here, because we have homogeneity and isotropy, everything reduces to ordinary differential equations, which are now the function of time. Okay, so interestingly, people thought that this captures the general features of general relativity. Right, so that these special solutions actually can tell you what general relativity is as a theory. And they were very surprised very recently when actually they were solving the full general relativity equations, the partial differential equations. Actually, general relativity behaves completely differently than you would expect. And that you can observe something like chaotic behavior, and you can observe something like the behavior of the solutions can be similar to Navier-Stokes equations and stuff like that. It's only past, 10 years maybe, when people are really solving the full nonlinear partial differential equations of general relativity. And then they are learning that actually general relativity is completely different theory than people thought 10 years ago. Okay, so it's just new development. And but before, people are just interested in these simple solutions, which you can write down analytically, but then they don't really capture the some hidden features of the theory. Okay, so anyway, so provided that we have nice equation of state, meaning that actually pressure divided by the density is a constant, which I call W, then you can easily solve the first equation, and it gives you that the density behaves like A to minus 3 times 1 plus W. And so this W for different components in the universe will be something. And so you solved how the energy density behaves with the scale factor. So what remains to actually do is to really find how the scale factor behaves in time. And that's given by the second equation here. So if you look at the second equation, so H is A dot over A. So it contains A and A dot. Now I plug for rho over that expression which I have there. So I write it in terms of A, and this is function of A. So then I have just one equation, one ODE for A, which is a first order ODE. So we can solve that equation, and it's done in my lecture note. But because it takes like three lines, it's too difficult to write it down, so I will not write it down. I'll just remark that, okay, so second step. Is to solve second equation for behavior A as function of t, or actually it's slightly simpler to do it in terms of A as a function of eta in the conformal time. And so now if you write this thing in terms of where you everywhere plug A as a function of eta, so you change dot to prime, instead of d over dt, I'll have d over d eta, then you find that this actually leads to a driven harmonic oscillator equation. Which, of course, you can solve. It's a simple equation. And I'll just give you the solution. And if you are interested in those three lines, please look in the study text. But it's not that illuminating. So you find that A as a function of eta is given by 8 pi g divided by 3. Now, the density now, the scale factor now, or at an instant of time, 3 times 1 plus w, and then 2 power alpha divided by 2. And then there is this function sk, which appears in our metric, 2 power alpha. And the argument of that function is eta over alpha. Okay, and so this alpha is just a number which depends on the matter content, and it's 1 plus 3 times w. Okay, so this is the solution for any k, for any matter content, as long as I can write it like that. But of course, what I'm also assuming is that really I am in one, so that one component is dominating. Right, so I'm just considering, let's say, matter, or I'm considering radiation, but I'm not considering transition from radiation to matter, where actually they were both comparably contributing. So then they would be more complicated. So this is for single component universe. Okay, so and then so now we have A as a function of eta, and if you want, you can write it as a function of time. So you just need to, if you want, you can find how t is related to eta by this thing. So you know this guy, you can find how t is related to eta, and then you can plug it here, and then you have A as a function of t. So just to give you an idea how this looks like, let me draw a table for k equal to 0. So k equal to 0 is nice, because then this is just eta over alpha. So k equals to 0 case. And so let me make this table. We have component. And then we have density. First w, and then how the density looks like, which we derived yesterday, and then how a behaves as a function of eta, and then finally how a behaves as a function of time. And of course, in your tutorial yesterday, you already derived how A behaves as a function of time for matter-dominated universe. Okay, so this is what you already seen yesterday. So matter, we know that the pressure is negligible. That's why W is equal to 0. The density dilutes is proportional to 1 over A cubed. This is what we derived yesterday. And then if you use this thing, so W is 0, so alpha is 2, and sk is sk of x is just x, so we have obviously eta square here. So a eta goes like eta square, and then if you integrate eta square, then you get eta cube. So t goes like eta cube, so eta goes like 1/3 of T. So this goes like 2/3. And this is the result that you derived yesterday in your tutorial. And this is how the scale factor really expands as the time goes forward. So now radiation. So we had W equals to 1/3. And we already know this goes like 1/8 to the 4. And if you plug it here, 1/3, then it's just alpha is just 1. Is it? W is 1/3. Interesting. Okay. So eta. And then if you write it in terms of time, it's just t^1/2. Okay, so this is how it behaves if you are in radiation-dominated era. And finally, we do lambda. So the equation of state I tried to convince you yesterday is -1. The density is just constant, so a^0. And then this goes like, let me put h there as well. So h is a constant in this case, as we will see. But anyway, so it's 1/8 and minus. And then if you integrate for time, it's just e to ht. Okay? So you have exponential expansion in the cosmological constant dominated universe. So such an expansion is definitely accelerating. So yeah, accelerating. It is decelerating here, but it's accelerating over here. So h is a constant here. Are there any questions to this? This is just for k equal to 0, but we probably live in k equal to 0 for some weird reason. So this may be actually what's actually happening. Okay. So if there are no questions to this, let me really tell you very briefly what is the current content of the universe and what is the current cosmological model. So current cosmological model. And it's called lambda CDM model. So lambda stands for lambda. So current cosmological model, this is the standard model, is based on general relativity and on what I'm saying here about FRW space and stuff like that. And so to fit the current observations, you really need lambda to describe our universe or something like that. Dark energy, but dark energy is consistent with lambda, with this constant. And you also need dark matter, and the C stands for cold dark matter. You can also have relativistic dark matter, but I will try to convince you next week that actually the relativistic one is ruled out by observation. So really, what seems to be true is that not only you need dark matter, but you also need that this dark matter is at this point non-relativistic something. Okay. So this is the current cosmological model. To describe the content of the universe, people introduce this funny omega, which depends on time, and it's given by the density of the component, so I stands for the component here, and then divided by the critical density, and everything in principle depends on time. Okay, so this is the density of my component, and this is the critical density of the universe at that given instant of time. And so I will belong to matter. and radiation and lambda. And perhaps you could also have the curvature, a dominated universe, but actually in our universe it doesn't happen for some reason. Okay, so these are the matter components. And then if you look what the observation gives you, like the first is that you have how much matter is in our universe. And that's 0.32 times critical density. So we basically, the total is something like rho critical, and so this is 0.32 rho critical. And you can split it into two kinds of matter. You can split it on omega dark matter or cold dark matter, and that's something like 0.27. People don't know what that is. And you can have omega normal matter, which is basically baryons, and that's 0.05. So this is what people know, and this is what described in standard model. And so if you are taking, or if you have taken standard model course, it's just 5% of the universe. Okay, so that's matter. And then you have omega of the cosmological constant, which is basically the rest. 0.68, again, people don't know what it is. And then we know that omega k, well, it's probably flat, but there's this uncertainty. It's like 1 plus minus 0.01. So there's this 0.01 possibility for k to be non-trivial. Okay, so now these are the numbers. Let me also mention something which Victor spent last tutorial about. So I remind you that the critical density is defined by 3 times 8 square of t, 8 pi g newton, and the principle depends on time. So now, if I'm interested in its value now, I need to know what the Hubble constant is now, and then the rest is just constants. And if you actually do the calculation, as Victor did yesterday, then you find that this is 10 to minus 26 kilograms per meter cube, so not much. Okay, so the critical density is actually teeny tiny, and it corresponds to something like, in average, you have 10 hydrogen atoms in meter cube. Okay, so that's the average density of matter of all these components in the universe. So it's teeny tiny. So it's basically empty, but there's 10 hydrogen atoms.
I mean, if it was only matter, it would be 10 hydrogen atoms?
So if it was just, yeah, I have to multiply by 0.32, or if you want. But like so this is the critical density. We know that the total density is actually almost critical density, up to 0.01, right? So this is really the average density of the universe now, including everything, including lambda, matter, radiation, everything.
So you convert the lambda to hydrogen in some sense?
Yeah, I converted lambda to hydrogen. Yes, exactly. I can do it. very good. And so this number comes from the fact that what we observe, and that's what how actually Victor was trying to calculate this, is that at this point you can measure what this H0 is, and it's given by. It's clever. So. If you don't know what it is, you just put something else here. So it's exactly equal to 100 times h kilometers per second per megaparsec. I'll tell you why these stupid units. And then the observation, so this is exact, of course. But then the observation tells you that this is something like 0.67 plus minus 0.01. Okay. So this is the Hubble expansion rate at this point. And so why these stupid units? So remember, that two lectures ago, I showed you that for nearby galaxies, we have this beautiful Hubble's law that the velocity is H0 times d. So if you are looking, if you are looking at the galaxy here, then the galaxy in average will be actually receding away from you, will be going away with the velocity v. In average, of course, there may be some peculiar motions. And so some galaxies actually coming closer, some galaxies coming away and whatever. But in average, they will be just receding away from you. And the velocity of the recede will be proportional to the distance to the galaxy and this Hubble's constant. So so if you talk about the distance, let's say 1 megaparsec, then you know that the galaxy should be receding in average away from you by 67 kilometers per second. Okay, so that's this thing here. So it's typical distance to galaxies like megaparsecs. So that's why this is useful unit to use for H0. So anyway, if you use this value here and you plug it over here, then you should be getting this density. Am I correct, Victor? Questions? Okay, so we know the matter content. And let me use once more this equation, how rho depends on A, and plot a standard graph which is drawn in every textbook. So are we just now plotting rho as A to minus 3, 1 plus W? But let me do it in logarithmic scale. So we have a graph summarizing epochs of domination. And so this one axis will be logarithm of rho divided by rho zero, whatever. And the other axis will be logarithm of A and so staring at this table here, I see that the slope for matter is minus 3, slope for radiation is minus 4, and the slope for this guy is 0. Okay, so now how much the density was there is, so the radiation looks something like this, with that slope minus 4. Okay, so this is radiation, slope minus 4. And so in the early universe, it was the radiation dominating. And then you have the matter, something like this. And that has slope minus 3. And then you could have this curvature k, which would have minus slope minus 2, but you don't really have it. And instead, we actually have the lambda thing. So lambda, and then slope is 0. Zero. So now, at this point, we already so then you can divide the history of the universe. Of course, as the logarithm a of is increasing, t is increasing. But I would have Big Bang somewhere here, and then future somewhere there. So now the history of the universe is divided into these epochs, where you would say, well, in this epoch, it's actually the lambda is the most important thing. So this is the lambda. Lambda epoch. This guy is where the matter is the most dominant. And this guy is when the radiation is the most dominant. So let's think here would be matter domination. And this thing here would be radiation domination. So at this point, we are somewhere here. So we already entered the era where actually the cosmological constant or dark energy is the most important component in the universe. And so at this point, that's why at this point our universe is exponentially expanding. Okay, it's accelerating. Okay, so this is us. Now there are two more very, very fundamental events which we talked which we will talk about next week. So one of them is where really the CMB, the microwave background, was released. And that happened already in the matter-dominated era. So somewhere here, you would say, is CMB released. So that already happened in the matter, was dominant. And then we also talk about a very nice event, which is this Big Bang nucleosynthesis. And that was in the radiation era. So this would be BBN. So these are, I would say, the three most important events in the history of the universe. Of course, us, and then the CMB, and then BBN, Big Bang nucleosynthesis. So now, if you believe in inflation, then inflation, again, is well modeled, well, can be well approximated by the cosmological constant. And so you would have exponential expansion of the universe in the very, very early universe. So again, slope minus slope zero. So lambda, but lambda was much bigger than it is now. So this would be something like the inflation era. Okay, if you believe in inflation. I'll try to convince you next week that there's a number of reasons why you should believe in inflation, but not really, okay? So that will be, again, a constant thing. And then there wouldn't be any radiation or matter, because at that point, really, the only matter content is assumed to be that of lambda or that of scalar field, if you want, which mimics this cosmological constant. But there was no real standard matter as you know it. There was no radiation. There was no matter, no nothing. It's just a scalar field dominant thing in the universe. OK? So are there any questions to this? So this is very, very briefly what's happening in our universe. We will go into many more details about this. The last thing I want to mention about the FRW spacetime is the anthropic principle. And so anthropic principle, it probably belongs more to philosophy than physics, but it actually tells you that maybe you shouldn't be searching for fundamental answers where there may not be any answers. Okay, so typically what people are trying to do, for example, in standard model or more fundamental physics than standard model, is they are trying to explain everything just from as little as you can. Right? So eventually you are trying to predict why we observe the value of lambda we observe it, why the mass of the electron is what it is. Right? What is really fundamentally behind all these very, very important constants of nature, why h bar is this, why g is this, why gravity is much weaker than any other force, and stuff like that. Okay. So now the anthropic principle is basically telling you, well, let's not do that. Let's believe that it must be so, because there is no fundamental explanation for this. And so I will just write it very vaguely. So I would say that the universe is as is because we are here to observe it. Okay, so this seems stupid, but it's actually not that stupid. So really, you know, maybe asking why we have lambda at all. So people didn't believe why we should have lambda, right? So lambda is something really, really ugly in Einstein equations. We shouldn't have that. So many people would argue based on, you know, niceness of whatever equations, lambda has to be equal to zero. But actually, it's not equal to zero. It's almost equal to zero. It's 10 to 120 times less than what would be predicted by QFT. So it's teeny tiny, but it's non-trivial, and it is there. Okay. So now, of course, what you would like to do is to predict why this value of lambda is there. Okay. But because we can observe lambda, there is not much space for lambda to be anything different. The reason is that if the lambda actually was bigger, so let's say we started somewhere here, then I will not have time to talk about it, but lambda sort of tends to expand things, right? So it tends to exponentially expand your universe. So now, in order for we to exist, there must be galaxies, and there must be stars, and there must be all these things, right? But in order to form the galaxies or stars and stuff like that, the gravitational collapse has to dominate and must happen, right? So you have to form the structures in the universe. You have to form stars by gravitational collapse. You have to form galaxies by gravitational collapse and stuff like that. If lambda was slightly bigger than what we observe today, this wouldn't happen. Okay, they would simply, you know, take these parts away, and they would never collapse, and we would never observe the universe as we observe it. Okay, so actually, the fact that we are here already tells you, yeah, lambda has to be really, really small. It actually has to be basically of this value. Okay, so and stuff like that. So once you start tuning, you know, various fundamental constants, then physics will be completely different, and probably it will not form anything, you know, useful or something like that. So it actually may happen that there's this multiverse theory where they say, well, yeah, so actually all possibilities are actually possible. So I could have universe where H bar is this and C is that and G is that. But of course, there wouldn't be any intelligent life to observe it. And we just happen to live in the universe where the values are convenient for creation of life. So that's basically hiding under this entropic principle. Okay, and so it may be a stupid idea, but maybe not. So maybe there is really no explanation for the value of lambda, any fundamental explanation. Okay. Okay, just, you know, I'll leave you to think about it and make your own. Yes?
But is this kind of the idea that all universe were realized and we happen to live in this particular that we were...
Yeah, so that's the idea of multiverse. It goes very well with this entropic principle in some sense. It's not exactly the same principle. The entropic principle is really saying, yeah, because I observe it, that's why I have to have that lambda. That's why I have to have that H bar. That's why I have to have this thing. If I start tuning them, it will be different. But yeah, it goes very well with this multiverse thing where you say, yeah, actually everything could happen, but typically and most generically, it doesn't lead to anything useful and doesn't lead to anybody to study that. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so I just wanted to mention that. very good. Are there any more questions to this? No questions. Excellent. So we can start chapter 2. We were going at the speed of light, so we are already starting chapter 2, matter. So in this chapter, I would like to actually tell you something more about these important events which happened, like what really happened at the CMB release, what really happened at Big Bang nuclear synthesis, and stuff like that. And for that, we will need at least a little bit of thermodynamics in non-equilibrium, but not really. Okay, so part A will be thermodynamics. In expanding universe. Okay, so I'll pretend to be doing statistical physics, although I'm not really doing it. So you know that the key quantity in statistical physics is the distribution function. here, I'll consider the reduced distribution function, which basically tells you how many particles of given species are in the volume of the phase space. So if you want to answer the question, how many, so number of particles of given species, let's call it I, in a given infinitesimal volume of phase space, so d and I, or small i, okay, so d and I, how many particles are in there? This is given by this distribution function. And the volume of the space okay, so this is our distribution function. And so if you know the distribution function, you can tell how many particles are in this volume of the phase space. So maybe you'll be searching for this 2 pi h bar. Just read the statistical physics notes. It's basically the minimal volume you can have from the uncertainty principle delta x delta p is h bar. Something like that. So it's the minimal volume of the phase space you can have. And you are evading this volume d3x, d3p by that minimal volume, by the Planck volume, if you want. OK, so this is the number of particles. And so what I will do from now on, I will set h bar equal to 1. So I will just have 2 pi cubed here. Okay, so now, of course, the difficult task is to find this distribution function. And in general, it will be quite a complicated problem. But once you have it, you can calculate lots of useful quantities and use lots of useful properties. So once we find fi, we can calculate particle density and I. So I basically have to integrate this over the momenta. So x is positions, p are the momenta, normal three momenta and three positions. I'm not doing this relativistically. Not really. So this is given by, well, d3p, 2 pi cube, and the integral over f I t x b. So you basically integrate out the momenta. And so whatever is left, it gives you the density at a given position and given time. Okay. So we have particle density. We can also do the energy density. Rho I, which will be the same thing. I have to integrate over the momenta, but I have to weight my distribution function with something like the energy. Okay, and this is really what happens. So d3 of p, 2 pi cube, and then e xp, t as well, if you want, fi t xp. Not really, because typically energy is conserved quantity, so it doesn't depend on time, but yeah, maybe it could. Okay, so this is how you calculate energy density. This is all very intuitive. Now, finally, you can calculate, for our purposes, interesting pressure. So Pi as a function of t and x. And then I never understood the argument in the high school, but that argument leads to the following prescription, 2 pi cube, and then p square 3e, and then fi. So basically, when you were deriving pressure of ideal gas or something like that, you put the gas in the box, and then you let that gas hit the walls of the box, and that there's a transfer of momentum, and you call that pressure, right, per area or whatever. So then this formula, this thing here, comes from there. Because I never understood it, it will be your task in the homework to actually do it properly, or actually at least intuitively. Okay, so this you will derive in your homework. So anyway, so if we know the distribution function, you can calculate all these interesting and important quantities. So that seems we are done. But of course, the most difficult task is to find this distribution function. Okay, so the question is how to find fi. And the general answer is it is complicated. So this is fi is governed in general. By the Boltzmann equation. Which in some sense is the most sneaky and most general kinetic equation you can write down. So now I'll explain why it is most sneaky and more general. And the reason is that it actually doesn't have any concrete form. So actually, it doesn't tell you really anything. So remember when we discussed classical mechanics, Hamiltonian revolution, we had Liouville's theorem. We had that the density, whatever, was preserved, the volume was preserved in the phase space, and also that the distribution function, the derivative of the distribution function was zero. So then, you may be asking, OK, so if the Hamiltonian mechanics is true, then this thing must be equal to 0. So what is this thing? So this thing is just dFi over dt, because it can depend explicitly on time, plus dFi over dx, j, and then xj dot, plus dFi over dpj, and then pj dot. And if you had just the standard Hamiltonian evolution, this would be equal to 0. Okay. So now, so if this were equal to 0, then Boltzmann equation is very nice. But it's not so, because you hide all the dirty physics on the right-hand side. So whatever sort of violates the Hamiltonian evolution, whatever is like non-elastic collisions of particles or whatever, so everything which is dissipative or everything which is really, really bad, you hide on the right-hand side. And so if you write it, you typically write it as collision term I, which in principle depends on this distribution function fj. Okay, so this is what is called Boltzmann equation, the most general form of Boltzmann equation, if you want. And so this collision term hides all dirty physics. But because, of course, in this formulation, this collision term is not specified, then this is the most general thing you can actually write down. So it's the most general kinetic equation. But also, it doesn't tell you really anything unless you put some ansatz for what this collision term can be. And so this is what people do for a living, is that they try various ansatzes for what this collision term could be. The simplest one is, for example, fi minus delta f is the simplest possible collision term. But you can try many other things. And then you solve this equation, typically numerically. You find what f is. You calculate these quantities, and you see whether it matches the observation or matches whatever you need to match. OK, so basically the art of inventing what the right-hand side has to be so that it gives the right answer, you can do it for a living. So anyway, so we will not do it here. If you want, you can read some examples of this collision term in Baumann's lectures. And he does some calculation, really using the Boltzmann equation. But instead, we will actually do equilibrium thermodynamics. So kinetic equations, typically you are out of equilibrium, right? So there's many kinetic equations. Boltzmann equation is just one of them. But they describe what happens out of equilibrium. So we will instead pretend that we almost have equilibrium. So instead, let us consider something which is called local thermal equilibrium. Thermal equilibrium. So local thermal equilibrium is characterized by the fact that it corresponds to the maximal entropy. It has maximal entropy. But it's not really an equilibrium because, and it cannot be an equilibrium because our universe is actually expanding, right? Because the universe is expanding, then there's lots of things which depend on time. Because it depends on time, it cannot be really a thermal equilibrium unless the rate of expansion is much, much slower than the rate of the process which is happening there. You know, if something is happening really, really fast, then in that time, the universe doesn't have time to expand a lot. And that's why you can sort of have an equilibrium. Okay, so this is down by following. So you form 1 over gamma. So gamma is the reaction rate. So for example, you consider some process, chemical process, or physical process, or whatever. And so reaction is, you know, how many things happen per time. So now if I do 1 over gamma, I have units of time. Okay, so this is proportional to or equal to, by definition, by collision time, and if this collision time is actually much, much smaller than the time in which the universe expands significantly, I can sort of have equilibrium. Okay, so this is much smaller than the expansion time of universe. And so that expansion time you can sort of estimate by something which is given by this Hubble's constant. So remember, the Hubble constant is a dot over a. So actually, it has units 1 over time, 1 over dt. Okay, so if I do 1 over h, it has units of time, and it tells you how long it takes for the universe to expand significantly. Okay, so this is something like the h, which is 1 over h. So this will be our condition that we will say that we have local thermal equilibrium for processes in our expanding universe if the reaction 1 over reaction rate is much, much smaller than 1 over Hubble constant, or Hubble constant much, much smaller than gamma. Okay, so this is the condition which we'll be using. And so provided this condition is satisfied, we will say that actually we have local thermal equilibrium, and we will use the standard distribution function for equilibrium. Okay, so then can use equilibrium distribution function And so this, of course, depends on whether you have bosons or fermions, but I'll use the Bose-Einstein distribution or Fermi-Dirac distribution here. So Fi, I'll say it's equal to 1 over E to E minus the chemical potential divided by temperature minus plus 1, where the minus is for bosons. And the plus is for fermions. Okay, so provided that this condition is satisfied, I will just cheat. I will not solve Boltzmann equation. I will say I'm basically in equilibrium, and that's why I have equilibrium distribution function, and it's given over here. That's the first approximation. Does it make sense? It makes sense, but I'm going slowly now. That's fine. Ah, but I started almost 10 minutes late, right? Questions? OK, so using this distribution function, now we can calculate whatever we want. In general, we will be using relativistic dispersion relation for the energy. So we'll be using that EI is just p square plus mi square. Square root of that. That'll be the full general relativistic dispersion relation. Okay, so now you see that we have to integrate. So, for example, to calculate the density or energy density or pressure, you just need to do this integral over p, right? So now the distribution function, however, depends only on E, which is independent of X. But E depends on P square. Okay? So on the magnitude of P, not on the direction of P. So I can go to spherical coordinates in the P space. And I can actually turn that integral over P into the integral over E. Okay, so we have. So this is what we need to do, d3 of p, which of course is just the angles, d omega, and then d square, and then dp. Okay, but using this relation here, p square is just e square minus m square. Okay, so I can turn it into this e and dE. Okay, so this is equal to d omega. Now p square is just e square minus m square. Mi square. And then if you do dp, then you will take a square root down. E square minus mi square. And then you have e dE. Or in other words, this is just d omega dE e and e square minus mi square. Okay? So this is how my integration measure looks like because of using this relativistic dispersion relation. So for example, for the density, I can write. So I have this 1 over 2 pi cube. And then I integrate over the angles and over the energy. But integration over the angles just gives me 4 pi, which cancels some pi over there. So I have just 1 over 2 pi square. OK, so because I integrate it over omega, that quantity f. And then I have integral from mi to infinity e square minus mi square e dE. And then the distribution which I have e minus mu I t and then minus plus one. Okay, so this is how the density is given. And similarly, you will do it in your homework for pressure and for the energy density. Okay, so this is just changing this integration to integration over E. And so to proceed further, it's nice to distinguish two cases, and we'll be using in two cases. First, we have relativistic particles, and then we have non-relativistic limit. In one case, if you have relativistic limit, is that basically that happens for very, very large temperatures in the universe. So you say that the temperatures of the universe, sort of, you know, radiation had a huge temperature, that's why the particles were relativistic. So T is much, much bigger than M and much, much bigger than the chemical potential. Okay, so first will be a relativistic limit. And I'll use that as the saying that the temperature is much, much bigger than both, than the chemical potential and the mass of the given species. So if that is true, then for example, this Ni is 1 over 2 pi square. So very crudely, Mi is basically 0. That's why I integrate from 0 to infinity. No, not from Mi to infinity, but from 0 to infinity. And then E, just relativistic E, is much, much bigger than M. So this is just E. So I have E square dE. And then I neglect the chemical potential. So I have E to E over T. And then minus plus one. Everybody happy so far? Okay. So now, of course, the trick is to say that this is my new variable x. So I'll be doing E over T is x. So E is T times x. So dE is T times dx. And so for each E I see here, I pick up the factor of T, which I can pull out of the integral. I have actually T square here and another T here. So I'll have T cube and bring out T cube. So this is equal to T cube 2 pi square. And then I will have an integral from 0 to infinity x square dx. That's that, and then I have e to the x minus plus one. Okay, so this is great because actually everything what is interesting, which is the temperature, is outside of the integral, and that integral, if convergent, is just a number which you don't really care about. But in this case, you can actually calculate it. But it's not that important. What is really important that this density actually, in the relativistic case, goes like T cube, like the temperature cube. Okay. So I'll have to do the non-relativistic limit tomorrow. But you can already start solving your homework, problem number 3 in the homework. Which is good. So, So that the integral 0 to infinity x squared dx e to the x minus plus 1 can actually be calculated. And it's given by the zeta function. It's 2 times zeta of 3 for bosons. And it's equal to 3 halves zeta of 3 for fermions. So just some number. And so you have that the density is really t cubed over 2 pi square times these numbers, depending on whether you are fermion boson. So if the fermion and boson has the same temperature, then you have this beautiful relation. So t fermion equals to t boson. Then you have that the density of fermions at a given temperature is actually given by this beautiful relation to the density of bosons, which comes, of course, from this 3 half and 2 here. OK. So if they are at the same temperature, yeah, then you have this. So now let me conclude by saying, well, what is really important here is that it's this t cube, right? So that the density and I is proportional to ti cube. But that's obvious in some sense, because what is density of the particles? It's number of particles per volume. Okay, so this goes like 1 over length cube. Okay, so now I want to use the units that the energy actually goes like 1 over length. Okay, so if I know that this goes like 1 over volume, I know that it must go like energy cube. Okay, so energy 1 over length. But in the relativistic case, the only energy which is non-trivial is the temperature. I neglect everything else. I neglect the mass. I neglect the chemical potential. I neglect all other quantities with the units of energy. So actually, you could immediately write down that the density has to go like t cube, because t is everything which behaves like energy. I have k balls 1 equal to 1 and all these things, right? So this is actually the energy. So by the same argument, if you want the energy density, rho I, so how does that behave? What do you think? So I have that thing over there. So it is, so rho I is how much energy per volume, right? So 1 over volume is again E cube. But now I have extra energy there. So I have e to the 4. So this must go like the temperature to power 4. And pressure in our units has the same units as energy. So must actually the pressure by dimensional arguments. So I'm just giving you hints for your homework, is that, of course, I want to recover all these numbers here. But you already know that the energy density has to go like t to the 4, and the pressure has to go like t to the 4. And actually, I will tell you the secret that the numbers are typically not important. So actually, this is all you need. Are there any questions to this? By the way, if you did recover, and again, you will do it in your homework. So for relativistic particles, if you form this ratio, pi over rho I, and you recover those numbers, can you guess what you get? Exactly. So this is a statistical mechanics proof that actually radiation or relativistic particles have the equation of state pressure over density is 1/3. OK, so you can do it from this, calculating these integrals. Questions? OK. So let's do the non-relativistic limit tomorrow. Thanks.